Last night, he addressed his party conference after becoming leader of Fine Gael 2 weeks ago. On Tuesday, Simon Harris will become Taoiseach, just the 16th person and the youngest ever to hold that office since the foundation of the state. He has never served in opposition. He takes over the leadership of the government at a time of challenge: record homelessness, a struggling health service, rising levels of crime, higher levels of immigration, and a more mobilised far-right movement in the country. So what kind of a Taoiseach will he be? Well, we're joined in the studio now by the Fine Gael leader, soon to be the Taoiseach, Minister Simon Harris. Good afternoon. You're welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much, Justin. Good afternoon.
You have a tough task ahead. What does a Simon Harris premiership look like? What will change under your leadership of the government, or will it be more of the same?
No, firstly, we will be absolutely true under my leadership to the programme for government that has been agreed between the three coalition parties. I'm very clear on that. Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and the Greens have signed up to a programme for government, and I'm committed to the full implementation of that out to next March. I'm also, though, very clear as the new leader of Fine Gael that I have every right and indeed every responsibility to begin to set out my views and visions and policies beyond the lifetime of that government in terms of what I'd like to see happen in Ireland over the next 5 years. And last night, in Galway at the Fine Gael Ardéisle, I began to do that by talking about a number of areas where I believe people want my party to reconnect, whether that's rural Ireland, whether it's crime, law and order, whether it's being more ambitious in relation to housing, whether it's providing clarity in relation to our tax strategies and plans into the future. So what I'm committing to people is to bringing a renewed energy to the delivery of the programme for government, but also a willingness to listen and re-engage on a number of big issues that Ireland needs to get right in the time ahead.
You were elected leader of your party without a contest. I mean, doesn't that tell us that Fine Gael is a party in trouble when only one person in the entire parliamentary party wanted to lead them into the elections?
No, I don't think it tells you that at all. It could perhaps tell you that my parliamentary party colleagues had confidence in my ability to take on this task, and I'm very grateful to them for that. But leadership is never about one individual. It's about a team of people. In the first instance, next week, I'll endeavour to assemble a team of Fine Gael cabinet ministers to work with Fianna Fáil and Green colleagues, ministers of state, and put people in key roles across our parliamentary party. It is true, and I presume this is the point you're getting at, that there are a number of people retiring in the Fine Gael party, deciding not to seek re-election. But that's true often in lots of workplaces. And what I can definitely say is this, that right across the country, for every retiring Fine Gael TD, there are other candidates chomping at the bit, wanting to be the next Fine Gael TD for that constituency. So we will, in the next election, have a mix of an experienced team that are used to government, used to steering the country through challenging times, but also new energy, new candidates and new people wanting to represent their community.
People will be looking at your own record in government, perhaps to try and get a sense of how you might lead the country, and in particular, your time in the Department of Health. Mm-hmm. And in one respect, it's a record of broken promises, isn't it? Especially to children with scoliosis. You promised them in September 2017 that they would wait no longer than 4 months for spinal surgery. By the end of that year, that promise wasn't kept. Do you regret making that promise?
I think a lot about this, Justin, and honestly, hand on heart, I don't and I can't regret making it, because what we did see as a result of setting that target, and let me be clear, by the way, it wasn't a target set by me, it was a target given to me by the HSE in line with best clinical advice. But what we did see was a very dramatic reduction in wait times for children with spinal surgeries. I think, and I don't have the figures in front of me, but from memory, over 200 children were waiting over that time period, and that number got well below 50. We were making real progress.
Last December, there were 78 children with scoliosis waiting more than 4 months for surgery.
And I was about to get to that. So we were making real progress. Then obviously the COVID pandemic did significantly disrupt the delivery of our health services. But I know Minister Donnelly remains committed to the target. He's indeed set up a new task force. He's appointed new clinical expertise. And as Taoiseach, I will continue to do everything I possibly can to assist all children waiting for health services and services, but absolutely children with scoliosis. And look, in terms of my time in the Department of Health, it's a legitimate question. It's probably one of the most demanding departments of government.
Yes.
But I'm also very proud of some of the things we achieved. If you ask the parent of a child with cystic fibrosis, the difference decisions that I made in that department in terms of providing them with life-altering and saving medication, or Cambi and other products, has been real. Changing the law to make sure children with a disability have access to a medical card. Changing the GP contract so chronic disease management could happen in the community and not in the hospital. And crucially, I think, reaching agreement with the opposition on Sláintecare Care, the first time we've ever had a cross-party plan on health reform, which Minister Donnelly is now driving through.
OK, but are you going to make good on your promise then, the promise to the children with scoliosis that you made in 2017, which wasn't kept? And some of the families of those children want to meet you and ask you and hold you to account for not making good on the promise then, and they want it to happen now. Will you meet them?
Of course I'll be meeting them, and of course I'll be meeting them in the course of my work with the Minister for Health. What I want to do now, though, as the leader of my party and as someone who hopes to be Taoiseach, is support fully Stephen Donnelly and the work that he's doing. He has appointed clinical expertise in this area. He has established a new task force, and I'll work might and main with him to try and get back to the progress that we genuinely were making together before the COVID pandemic, and to try and reach that target, which isn't a political target. It is a clinical target in terms of the time people should have to wait for that very important surgery.
You made other promises too in the Department of Health which weren't kept. You promised free GP care for under 12s. That still hasn't happened. You promised to have the Children's Hospital built by 2021. Still not built. You promised to hold individuals to account for spending overruns on that project. That's not been done. And you promised to cut hospital waiting lists. There's some progress on that, but not while you were in office. Can you understand why people might look at your record and say that this is a guy who makes a lot of promises that he can't keep?
No, I can't, because of course you listed things there as is your right and as is fair, but of course there's a context to each of those things. So for example, you talked about the free GP care for children under 12. I brought that legislation through the Dáil. I delivered on my commitment in relation to legislating in that area. There was then a change of government, and the new government adopted a different approach in relation to free GP care, which was based on
income.
You're
in that government?
Yes, I am. And the government decided that it was best to deliver in relation to income levels. And as a result, we have seen a massive expansion of people accessing free GP care. You talk about the commitment to have the Children's Hospital open. You, of course, are well aware of the fact that the construction industry was shut down many times as a result of a pandemic. And I'm actually proud by it. And I take the criticism on the Children's Hospital and the cost. I take it, and there's legitimate learnings from that. But I'm also bloody proud, to be quite frank, that actually a politician made a decision to build a Children's Hospital, because for far too long, the easiest thing to do in politics is rock up to the office, not make a decision. But then you don't actually deliver better children's health services in this country.
The easiest thing to do in politics, perhaps, is to make promises. And I mean, one of the people you worked closely with when you were Minister for Health is the former HSE boss, Tony O'Brien. In 2018, he wrote a scathing piece describing you as a weak minister who runs scared of headlines. Is he right? Are you somebody who bases your decisions based on the headlines that you're going to get that day? And is that why you make so many promises?
No, I think anybody who knows me and anybody who's worked with me and anybody who's encountered me, I think would say that I make decisions and commitments on the basis of the people I engage with and what I learn. So, for example, Tony O'Brien and I would have had a very strong difference of opinion in relation to the cervical check situation. But the late, great Vicky Phelan spoke very positively of the way I addressed that and the way I dealt with her and others. So I'd much rather, quite frankly, have the confidence and support of the people like Vicky in terms of how I dealt with that situation than others who were involved in the health service. So no, I absolutely, as a politician, nobody's perfect. Have I made mistakes? Of course I have. But do I approach every task I do with, I hope, honesty and energy and a wish to try and make a positive impact? I do. And I'm proud of a lot of what we achieved in the Department of Health, including changing the constitution for women's reproductive rights, including the leadership we showed at the start of the COVID pandemic, including opening more primary care centres right across the country. And as Taoiseach, I will bring the same energy I've brought to every single job I've held to try and make a positive difference for people in this country.
You're putting together your backroom team. It was reported this weekend that you have three people in it who used to be journalists, and you have two with a background in PR. I mean, doesn't that tell us that you're somebody who is focused heavily on their image, on how they will be presented in the media?
No, it doesn't. And I think, to be honest, I think it does some of those people a significant disservice to try and pigeonhole them. Many of those people have been working in government, have been working on the delivery of policy for quite a number of years. Some of those people, of course, work in media, because I quite frankly believe that the media would probably want to have a government press secretary and an assistant government press secretary. These are important roles to fill. But I have a team that brings a whole variety of talents, and I'm very proud of them.
Have you hired anybody to advise you on Northern Ireland, on housing, on health or international affairs?
I'll be hiring both a Northern Ireland advisor and a European advisor and an economic advisor in the coming days.
You will. Okay.
In the coming weeks.
You're still Minister for Higher Education. There are serious questions around governance at the University of Limerick. The Business Post today is reporting that funding for capital projects is now in doubt because of those governance issues. Did you take your eye off the ball in relation to what was going on at the University of Limerick in relation to how they were spending public money?
No, I did the exact opposite. I changed the law to make sure that we actually have a higher education authority that can do exactly what it can do right now when something goes wrong in a university. Until I passed the Higher Education Authority Act, which I should point out was opposed by so many vested interests, but we stuck firm. Until we passed that, we would not have had a higher education authority with the power to now do what it's doing. I wanted to have laws in place that meant that if something does go wrong in an organisation, and as we know, things can go wrong in any organisation, that there's a teeth that the state has that it can use in relation to that. And I must say, I'm very proud of the stance that's been taken by the Higher Education Authority in very clearly putting a pause on capital, in very clearly demanding answers and accountability. And I expect that university to cooperate fully with the Higher Education Authority in line with the law. And I think the HEA is doing an excellent job in relation to that.
Do you have confidence in the leadership of that university?
I'm conscious of the office that I'm about to assume, and I'm very happy for the process that's in place by the HEA to run its course. But there are very serious and legitimate issues that need to be answered.
But you're not answering that question about confidence.
Well, I think it's really important that due process is allowed to play out, and the Higher Education Authority has a clear process in place, and I'm quite sure the Public Accounts Committee will have a view on this, as they should.
You made several promises in relation to law and order issues in your speech last night. Tougher sentences, increased penalties for knife crime, body cameras for Gardaí, and new measures to deal with antisocial behaviour. Do you intend to put somebody in charge of the Department of Justice who will make those changes?
So I intend not to appoint my cabinet in RT today, and I'll reveal the names of Fine Gael ministers on Tuesday.
Okay,
I'm much more concerned about, I don't mean to be flippant in relation to an important question, but what I'm much more concerned about is making sure that we deliver on the policy agenda that I outlined last night at the Ardesh, and that's absolutely what a government headed by me will do.
The implication, though, of your speech last night was that there's not enough being done in the issue and in the area of law and order by the current minister, Helen McEntee. Is that what you're implying by making those new promises last night?
No, it's not what I'm implying at all. Minister McEntee is a good minister and a good friend and a good colleague. And indeed, many of the areas that I outlined are areas she's commenced work on. For example, the rollout of body cams is happening as a result of her work and will start to happen this summer in Dublin, then Waterford and then Limerick. But what I am saying is this, and I know this is a view Helen and all my colleagues in Fine Gael would share, is that there are real and legitimate concerns about law and order, and the communities want to see us support the Gardaí, increase the number of guards, and also, where possible and desirable, change the law to empower the Gardaí and the judiciary. And what I tried to do last night was outline not just sentiment or vision when it comes to law and order, but actually a number of concrete, practical measures that I intend to take should I be given the honour of leading government.
Do you have confidence then in the Minister for Justice to continue doing that job that she's doing at the moment?
I have absolute confidence in the Minister for Justice, but obviously the Cabinet will be decided by me on Tuesday.
All right. Your party colleague Michael Ring was on this programme 2 weeks ago raising concerns about the future for Fine Gael. He said that the party had been too left for too long and needed to move back to the centre or even to the right. Is he right?
Well, I made the mistake of complimenting Michael Ring last night in the Ardesh speech, and he got such a rip-roaring applause from the delegates that I nearly ran over time on the speech. But look, Michael is an excellent politician. He's a good colleague. He has his way of expressing things and I have mine. The way I would put it is this. I do think there's a real desire in Fine Gael and amongst people who vote Fine Gael, or perhaps even people who are lapsed Fine Gael voters, to see us reconnect on a number of important issues. I'm proud, by the way, let me be clear, of a number of the social changes we've seen in this country. I'm proud to have played my small part in helping with some of them. But I also know when it comes to things like rural Ireland, agriculture, farmers, small business, bread and butter issues, that there is a real desire for people to be sure that this party has its back and to show actions in relation to that. I know if it's helpful, I know Deputy Ring referenced, I think, two pieces of legislation on your programme.
Yeah, we'll get to those.
Sorry, my apologies.
In a second.
Happy to comment on them.
But I just wanted to get a sense from you. Are you hoping to reposition then Fine Gael on the political spectrum and do, as Michael Ring says, move it to the more to the centre or more to the right?
Fine Gael is a centrist party. I mean, I don't like kind of the labels that are applied in other countries. I'm not sure they serve us well in this country, because I think people listening to this programme don't obsess about them. What they do want to know, though, is what's he going to do for the small business? What's he going to do for the farm? Is he going to make progress to get my child out of the box bedroom and into their own home? What's he going to do on childcare? How are we going to make progress on disability services? So my agenda is going to be one of delivery, one of trying to really focus on core issues where I'm being honest and proud of my party, I'm proud of our record, but there are certain areas where we need to do much more and do better.
Michael Ring said, and he's not alone in this, he said that the hate speech legislation has to be scrapped. Do you agree with him?
I don't, but I do think it needs engagement, and I do think it needs amendment. I intend, should I be given the honour of becoming Taoiseach, to meet with the Minister for Justice, with the Garda Commissioner, and in relation to another piece of legislation around opening hours for pubs and nightclubs with the Road Safety Authority, because I want to make sure we get this right. We need to make sure the Gardaí have the powers to tackle hate crime, and therefore we need hate crime legislation. Of that I'm very clear. We also need to make sure that there's no unintended consequences or fears in relation to freedom of speech, freedom of expression. And I do think, and the Minister has acknowledged this, there is a need to amend the legislation. This is legislation...
So, but when you say we need hate crime legislation, do you think we need hate speech legislation?
I think we probably do, but I'm very certain we need hate crime legislation, and I'd like to hear the view.
Most people don't disagree with that. I think even critics of the legislation don't disagree.
Well, therefore, that's the answer as to why you wouldn't scrap the bill, right? So, I mean, there is a real important need in this country to legislate for hate crime. There is no doubt that hate speech can contribute to crime. There is also a balance, though, in relation to freedom of expression. And what I'm saying is, and I'm not going further than this today, quite frankly, what I'm saying is, should I become Taoiseach on Tuesday, I will take a brief period of time, including engaging, obviously, with my coalition colleagues in Fianna Fáil and the Greens and the Taoiseach Minister Ryan, in relation to two pieces of legislation that I think deserve another look. One is the hate crime and speech legislation, and one is the legislation in relation to the opening hours of nightclubs and other things. There's some good stuff in that, but I've also heard some concerns from the Road Safety Authority that absolutely need to be taken on board.
You said in a parliamentary reply last year in relation to the hate speech legislation, you said it was well researched, well balanced and grounded in the lived experience of what individuals facing hate speech actually need.
I did.
Have you changed your mind now on that?
No, but I do think the politicians, including myself, need to actually be show a little bit more humility in public life, and I include myself in this, in terms of being willing to listen to concerns and viewpoints and then act. So let me be very clear. This, my leadership is not just going to be about listening. Listening, taking advice and then acting. And there has been enough concern expressed around this that I think it merits a very short period of me engaging, including with the Garda Commissioner and the Minister for Justice, and then deciding how best to proceed. But there will be legislation in this area. This is in the programme for government. It's just about making sure we get it right.
Will it be done in the lifetime of this government?
That is my intention.
And you mentioned then the concerns that are also being raised around extended hours for the serving of alcohol in nightclubs. Is that something that you're going to revisit then?
Being honest, I want to be very honest with you, I've mixed views on this, because we need a nighttime economy and we are out of kilter with many other European countries in relation to this. And there's many businesses and others who talk about the importance of the nighttime economy. We also need to make it simpler and easier for vintners, for publicans in relation to their own licensing. So there's definitely something good in this space. But when I'm reading reports about the RSA, the Road Safety Authority, and others expressing a view, I think that it's very important that their view is heard. So these are the two pieces of legislation that I want to take stock on, listen, and then decide how best to proceed. I'm very clear there's some good stuff in that legislation. I just want to make sure that we get it right.
You spoke last night about introducing a firm and fair immigration system. When you talk about the immigration system being firm, do you actually mean that there needs to be more deportations?
Yes. And there does. And deportations is a normal part of any migration system. It's not something that belongs on any part of the political spectrum. It's not about being nasty or not nice or inhumane. This is a welcoming country that knows the benefits of immigration, and I know the benefits of immigration. But Irish people have a great sense of fairness, and they also want to know that rules are in place and rules are applied. Now, there's been very good progress made in recent months and over the last few years in terms of speeding up processing times for people who are seeking a right to come to this country. But there's more that needs to be done. I also think and very much welcome the EU Migration Pact, because I do not buy into this idea that this little country, this little island on the geographic periphery of Europe, can address global migration on its own. And I think there's a number of safeguards within that pact, which I look forward to debating in the Dáil, which will actually help us with things like deportations, returns to other countries and secondary movements.
That pact, though, also commits Ireland to signing up to process migrants who land in Mediterranean countries. Isn't that likely to add further pressure to our immigration system here?
I don't believe so, because respectfully, I think it has to, the pact has to be read in its entirety, because it also makes it much easier to, for want of a better word, it's not a word I like, but to return somebody who's been engaged in secondary movement. In other words, somebody who's already arrived in another European country. And a lot of the people who would come to Ireland have had secondary movements. We're geographically quite difficult to get to compared to many countries on mainland Europe. But I do think this idea of European solidarity, working together at an EU level, working together on the borders of the EU, is ultimately and fundamentally a good thing for Ireland and for migration. We benefit from immigration. It's a relatively new phenomenon in this country. The war in Ukraine has obviously accelerated the pace of challenge, but we need to do better in relation to this, and I'm very aware of that.
The government is going to develop a number of centres to house international protection applicants. Will you be asking Fine Gael councillors around the country to support the location of those centres, even if it's those centres are located in their own communities where there might be some local upset or unrest about them?
Yeah, look, I mean, the reality is there's a very good accommodation framework that's been brought forward by the minister, and in it, it, I think, provides a number of assurances, trying to move away from this idea of using hotels, student accommodation. But that obviously does mean in any accommodation strategy, we do need to provide locations. And I do want communities to be engaged with. I do want people to be listened to. I don't want people to be shouted down for expressing a view or asking information about their community. But yes, ultimately, I expect public representatives, including my own, to recognise the importance of living up to our obligations in terms of providing that accommodation. We do need to do better in listening. I mean, this idea of going into a town and taking the only hotel in the town is not good for social cohesion, and the new framework recognises that.
I want to ask you about housing. You said that the government would build 250,000 houses over the next 5 years if you continue to be the head of government. That's not a government target, and you're a member of the current government. You're going to be leader of that government on Tuesday. Is the government target wrong then?
No, because the government targets are being reviewed at the moment. So the government target for this year is 33,000 homes. But let's be honest, Justin, we built 32,695 last year. We almost hit this year's target last year. So there's a recognition from Minister O'Brien and others that the targets need to be revised. We have census figures. We've work underway by the ESRI. I fully support the work of Minister O'Brien. But also as a leader of a political party and a new leader, I think it's an entirely appropriate thing when I stand up to give my first address as party leader that I recognise that the scale of ambition needs to increase. And I think people in this country would have been very underwhelmed if a new leader had stood up and said the current targets will just trundle on into the future. We need to get to about 250,000 new homes being built between 2025 and 2030. Obviously, there'll be a general election by March of next year. So I'm setting out very much my party's view in terms of the scale of ambition.
And that's an average of 50,000 homes a year over the next 5 years. The Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, said last month that building 50,000 homes this year or next year is not achievable. So that means you're going to have to backload if you're going to reach the target you're talking about. How many homes would you build next year then?
So the Taoiseach is correct, and I should acknowledge that. And I at no point last night suggested it would be an even 50,000 over five. That's just people dividing 250 by five. That's not the plan. The government targets for next year will be set by the government. And as you point out, I'm due to lead that government. So the government and the Minister for Housing will set those targets and will publish those targets later
but
this year.
You made a promise last night, so you must know how many houses could be built next year then.
I don't yet, because the government hasn't yet published those targets. But what I do know is this. We will deliver 250,000 houses between the years 2025 and 2030. I also have a fair sense of how we're going to do it. I think we're going to do it by keeping a number of supports in place, including Help to Buy, because that helps people buy their own homes, but it also stimulates supply. I'd like to see the development levies, which are working, and Minister O'Brien deserves credit for that. I'd like to see them extended, because we've seen real big increase in commencement figures this January, the highest, I think, since 2015. We're also going to do it by and in my current brief, by building student accommodation on a scale we haven't, because up until now, students have been competing with young professionals, perhaps to rent a home. So the number of actions we can take, modern methods of construction will reduce the length of time it takes to build a home. So there's a number of concrete actions we can take to make this progress. So this is a scale of ambition Ireland needs.
You're 37 years old. You've been a member of the government for 13 years. Many people of your own age, they can't afford to buy a house. They can't afford the rent. They can't find a home to rent. If they're nurses or Gardaí, they can't take jobs in Dublin, many of them because it's too expensive to live in this city. There are 4,000 homeless children under your government's watch. I mean, how can you go to the electorate and say, trust me to fix this, I'm the new guy in charge with these new targets, when you've been part of the government that's been presiding over these problems for 13 years?
Because I don't think, respectfully, that's a fair categorisation of the government's record. It's somewhat selective. When Fine Gael came to government in 2011, there were fewer than 7,000 homes built that year. We've now exceeded over 30,000. You talk about renters, we've worked to put in place financial support, a renter's tax credit. I'd like to see that increase. We've brought in a scheme to help those young people you're talking about buy their first home by giving them some of their own tax back, a scheme other parties want to abolish outside of government. That's helped 46,000 people. So the challenges in politics never go away. I'm not seeking to take this job in any way, shape or form saying mission accomplished. Far from it. I'm seeking to say that I want to build on the progress we've made in areas, and I want to bring a renewed focus to areas in which we need to do better. I accept housing is one of those areas. So too is small business, farming, regional development, childcare costs. We've a lot of work that we need to do, but I'm up for it and I'm willing to give it my all.
Do you believe that what's happening in Gaza is genocide?
I believe it's really important that political leaders like me respect the international processes that are in place to determine those things. That's how our international courts work. But what I do believe is this. I believe that the spectre of famine is utterly horrifying. And I do believe the actions of Prime Minister Netanyahu are absolutely repulsive in my view. I'm very clear that the actions of Hamas last October was a terrorist act, a horrific terrorist act on the people of Israel. It should be condemned outright. Hostages should be released. But reason, in my view, has now been replaced by revenge. And as incoming Taoiseach of this country, I will always speak up for this.
In your speech last night, but do you believe it's genocide?
I've given you my answer on that. I don't believe it's helpful for people who wish to become a Taoiseach of a country to predetermine something that has to be determined by the courts. Ireland, as the Taoiseach has outlined, will make an intervention in relation to that court process. I think that's the right thing to do. But I do absolutely believe what's happening in the Middle East is horrific. It is unjustified. It needs to stop and it needs to be called out for what it is, which is utterly, utterly repulsed by anybody with any sense of humanity in this world.
You were asked by Sky News this morning about the prospect of a united Ireland, and you said, and I quote, "It's a legitimate political aspiration for people to want to see a united Ireland, but it's not where my focus and priority is now, and quite frankly, I don't believe it's where our priority and focus should be." Now, the official name of your own party, as you know, is Fine Gael United Ireland. So it's still there in your founding documents. Are you betraying your founding principles of your party if you say that a united Ireland is not and should not be a priority?
Oh, no, let me be clear. I want to see a united Ireland. I believe in a united Ireland. It is in the title of my party. And what I said in that interview on Sky News is that the Good Friday Agreement provides a framework for people to advance their political and constitutional aspirations. Different people have different perspectives in relation to the constitutional status of Northern Ireland. But what I did say, and I absolutely stand by, is this. The priority today should be on harnessing the full potential of the Good Friday Agreement. I met young people at a Shared Island Youth Forum recently who weren't born. They weren't born when the Good Friday Agreement was put in place. They've yet to see the full benefit of it. The peace we have in Ireland is enduring, but it can be chilly, it can be frosty. It's been stop-start in terms of political institutions. Tomorrow I'll go to Armagh with government colleagues. It'll be the first time the North-South Ministerial Council has met in person in 4 years. So I want my focus to be on practical areas of cooperation and collaboration, getting to know each other better.
Okay, but if you want a united Ireland, when is the right time for that?
I don't know the answer to that, quite frankly, but I know that the right...
In your lifetime?
I'd like to. It's my personal and political aspiration that we would see one in my lifetime, but I'm one person. As Taoiseach of this country, should I be given that honour next week, my immediate priority will be on ensuring that we can see the full potential and beauty of the Good Friday Agreement in peace, prosperity across this island and closer relationships with our nearest neighbour in the UK. And that, I think that's where the focus should be right now.
Okay, a few questions on politics to you. Do you know at this point who's going to be in your cabinet? I mean, I know you're not going to tell me.
I'm certainly not going to tell you. But as you can imagine, I'm beginning to give serious consideration to it now. But no, I still haven't finalised some elements of it.
Do you intend to promote more women?
Again, that's tied in with the last question. Look, that will become clearer on Tuesday.
Without Simon Coveney in the government, Munster, I think I think you might be the most southerly Fine Gael minister once Simon Coveney is gone. If there isn't a change, Munster would be without a Fine Gael minister. Is that something that you intend to rectify?
I wouldn't want to insult a Cork man here in the studio today in relation to that. Look, I'm conscious of the fact that we've to balance a number of things: geography, gender, ability to deliver. The most important element for me is the ability to deliver on the priorities that I set out on behalf of our party at our Ardèche in Galway yesterday. And look, cabinet reshuffles, they're imperfect. No matter what I do, someone will say I got it wrong. What you have to do is use your judgment as best you can to put in place a team. There's lots of opportunities for people to play their full part, including ministers of state, ministers, committee chairs, and even those who are not seeking elected office the next time. I've asked them and will be asking them to continue to play a role in the future of our party.
What about Kate O'Connolly? Gave her a big hug yesterday at the party's Ardèche. Do you want her to run for election?
Kate's a friend of mine. I think she was a great politician. I think she was a great TD. I'd love to see her back in some role. We had a convention in Dublin Bay South where my friend Councillor James Gagan was selected to contest the next election. James is also a great candidate. And look, if Kate wants to play a role in the future of the party, she's very welcome and there'll be many opportunities.
Will you be running two in that constituency?
That's a matter for our executive council and one we haven't given consideration to and probably won't until after the local elections.
Would you like Mairead McGuinness to remain as EU commissioner?
Mairead McGuinness is an exceptional EU commissioner. She genuinely is. But I'm also very conscious of the fact that the name of the next commissioner will be brought to cabinet by the leader of Fianna Fáil, the Tánaiste, Micheál Martin.
And you're going to stick to that?
That's my understanding. And I have full confidence that Micheál Martin, as our Minister for Foreign Affairs, a lot of experience, will know to bring forward a good name. It's important Ireland nominates a good person. But Mairead McGuinness is an exceptional commissioner and I'm very proud of the work she does.
Will there be a general election this year?
That's absolutely not my intention. My intention is that we have the local and European elections in June. Looking forward to getting out and canvassing for them. And I want this government to run its full term out to next March. That obviously involves everyone acting in good faith, as I'm sure we will.
All right. Before I let you go, you'll be the country's youngest ever Taoiseach on Tuesday. A huge honour for you, for your family. Have you been given any advice by the previous youngest ever Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, on how to handle the job?
I've spoken to both the current Taoiseach, Leo, and I've spoken to the former Taoiseach, Enda Kenny. I think the current Taoiseach did say it's important you bring yourself to the office in terms of, you know, everybody approaches it with their own authenticity and sense of priority and sense of perspective. And Enda Kenny certainly talked to me about the importance of energy, hard work, the honour that it is. And I must say it meant the world to me that Enda sent he's in New Zealand, couldn't be at our Ardèche, but sent a very kind video message that certainly G'd up our troops in Galway last night.
Leo Varadkar said early on in his premiership that he wouldn't be in politics by the age of 50, and he's kept to that. Do you have an exit date for yourself? I know you haven't started the job yet.
Yeah, I'd rather have the start date first, Justin, but no, I don't. But look, I think politics, I'd make a broader point that I think politics and the dynamic around politics has changed. And I think not just in Ireland, but right across Europe and other countries, you often see people now coming into politics at an earlier age, staying a period of time, trying to make their contribution as best they can and then moving on. So look, I'm looking forward to taking up this role. I'm going to give it my absolute all. And I'm at the moment thinking about the start date.
Simon Harris, leader of Fine Gael, thank you very much for talking to us today.
Germaine Bogart.